my listeners. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay.
Sure. While you're here.
Sure. My name is Brian Arend, and I sort of have two roles, occupations. First, I'm a professor at the University of Waterloo. This is my day job.
Oh, excellent.
And just on the side, for fun, I'm the president of this little publishing company with a crazy name called Loon and Balloon. And we've just put out our second novel, The Berlin Dossier, and
excellent.
We're out promoting it.
Excellent. I want to talk to you about Loon and Balloon. Where did you get the idea for that name? I love it.
Yeah, I have a founding partner in the company. His name is Sam Sorbera. Mm-hmm. He's a corporate lawyer here locally, and it's his idea. He likes the Muskoka area, and so there's lots of loons up there. So I think the loon has always been a favorite animal of his.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we chose it as name for the company is that it's crazy, right? Like if we had a serious name, we're just another dull publisher with a serious name, no one would remember, right?
Right?
I mean, it's the age of Yahoo and Google. You have to have a crazy name to stick in somebody's brain.
That's
so
right.
Hence Loon and Balloon. It's also a crazy business, you know?
Yeah.
It's a really competitive business. So yet more reasons to call it Loon and Balloon.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, so why publishing? Why did you decide to become a publisher?
Well,
professor.
Yeah. Well, in a way, because I'm a prof, and I'm actually an author too, although I write nonfiction, I have experience with the publishing world as an author, so I know a bit about it, and I have some contacts, and I kind of know how to put a book together. So it was just kind of a natural fit for me, and Sam and I kind of met, and Sam, the press is really Sam's brainchild, and it's his baby. He's a passionate kind of book guy. He has an enormous book collection, lots of signed first editions and things like that. Really impressive.
Jealous.
Yeah, me too.
You should interview him too.
Yes, he's a hard guy to get a hold of. He wants to be the silent partner in all of this.
Okay.
You know, busy man. He's a busy guy. Lots of corporations are suing each other and everything. So we just kind of decided that there's a gap in Canada in publishing, about publishing entertaining Canadian novels, right? I mean, there's lots of literature, lots of serious presses devoted to serious literature, you know, Can Lit, as it's called, but they always go broke, and they always kind of depend on government grants, and they only survive for a few years. So we said, well, there's no point in going down that road because it's clear what the result is. So let's publish entertaining trash, and Canadians can write entertaining trash, just Americans can. But the main thing that we really are interested in exploring is doing crossover from publishing into the selling of rights to TV and film.
Oh,
yeah,
excellent.
Because in the end, that's the only way to make money.
Mm-hmm.
In modern publishing, right? A Canadian book is a bestseller if it sells 5,000 copies. Well, if you do the math, you know, this is not a lot of money. So you want to crack the American market, and you want to sell rights to other media.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're really kind of focused on.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
That's great. So you pretty much stick to just the one genre of music, music, books, entertaining books, which is great.
Yeah, but adult fiction, right? I mean, I haven't yet talked Sam into doing children's fiction, but I think one day, J.K. Rowling hasn't done too shabbily for herself, but Sam's main interest is adult fiction, and so for now, that's where our publication efforts are going to be. But any genre within adult entertaining fiction, right?
Okay.
So Western, thriller, espionage, murder mystery, political intrigue, romance.
Yeah, I've been reading some really fun Canadian mysteries.
Terrific, absolutely.
A mysterious affair.
Yes, right.
Downwater.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And you were having some great readings.
Yeah.
And so it was great.
It's surprising.
Yeah.
It's surprising the kind of talent that's there. Our first book is from a guy from Halifax. Our second book is a guy from Montreal. And then books 3 and 4 are going to be from Waterloo authors, actually.
Oh, awesome.
So there's a lot of talent out there, you know. I kind of think that almost everyone has a manuscript in their back pocket, and they're just waiting to write it up and for the right outlet to publish it.
Well, all of us who really love books and really love to read just go, well, I could do that.
Yeah, well, it's easier to say than to do, but I think in principle, you know, if you are literate, and above all, if you read a lot, you know what goes into a good book.
That's right.
It's really just a matter of disciplining yourself to actually do the work and get a halfway decent editor who can help you, and then why not, right? Absolutely, why not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if somebody decides to go, hey, yeah, why not? How do they contact you?
Well, they go to our website, which is www.loonandballoon.com. Jonathan.com, all lowercase, all one word, and there are submission instructions. And I'd be very glad to take a look at proposals and manuscripts, and we'll get back to them.
Oh, that's great. So what is the most difficult part about putting a book together?
The first part is kind of selecting which is the book you're going to go with. There's lots of good ones. Now, it's competitive to get published. And then once you've decided, it's really kind of working with the author to make it the best that it can be. And that can be a kind of difficult negotiation. You want to respect their artistic vision and their artistic integrity, but at the end, you want to sell books. And you might have a different vision as an editor about what's funny or what's not funny, what moves a book, what turns the pages and what doesn't. So that's actually kind of really interesting. I mean, I guess I say this because, I'm the editor guy. But negotiating the relationship with the author is kind of interesting and tricky. But in the end, the most difficult thing, of course, is just to sell the darn thing, to make money off of it. And that has a lot of challenges, especially in Canada.
Absolutely.
In America, the market is just so big that you don't have to worry about it as much. You get a good distributor, right? Go. But in Canada, the market is just so small. And, the tastes are quite refined in Canada. Readers are more picky in Canada than they are in the States. So pleasing them, I think, is a little bit harder as well.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
What about Europe?
Our forays into Europe have just been, we haven't negotiated a foreign language rights sale. I mean, we hope to. So we've sold a few in the UK. And I guess probably that is the smallest number of sales that we've had compared to Canada and the States. But we haven't also really been trying to get there, right? Because we're just our second novel ever. Yeah. So we're definitely focused on North America. And we'll go from there, hopefully one day, right? I mean, ideally, we would sell the rights to a UK publisher, and they would bring it to birth in the UK.
So tell me, what kind of a professor are you?
I try. I'm in the philosophy department, and I'm the director of international studies. So I wear two hats there as well.
Good. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. So I get to teach lots of different students, which is enjoyable.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, who does the artwork? How do you come up with that kind of thing for a book?
Yeah, well, essentially, we have a relationship with the printer, Friesland's Corporation, which is outside of Winnipeg. And I actually know the president of that company, who actually went to Waterloo. We met as undergrads. And I've known Karen Friesland for a whole number of years. And actually, that was one of the things that I brought to the table in talking to Sam, that, I knew one of the biggest printers in Canada. And we've been able to get a great deal and a great relationship with them. And they have in-house art design. And we've been very, very pleased with them.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, well, it's nice if you can just do it all with one company and under one roof. It makes a huge difference.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So somebody has this wonderful idea for a book.
Right.
Okay. Because I have a few.
Okay. Great. Great. I'd love
Most
to hear.
Most of your children's books, though.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so then they write the story, and they send it to you, and you go, what happens then? You send
a letter.
It needs a little tweaking. Do this.
I'd be as honest as I possibly can, but I'd be as nice as I possibly can, right? There's no point in destroying someone's feelings, but there's also no point in giving them unrealistic hopes, right? If you just know that you can't work this book, you don't say, tweak it here, there. You just kind of flat out say, I'm sorry, we're not interested. But you say it in as nice a possible way. It is a very competitive fiction market. Fiction especially is so tough. Just in the year and a half that we've been in business, I've looked at literally hundreds of manuscript submissions, and we've just published our second, and we're just going to publish 3 and 4 in the fall. So that just, if you do the numbers there,
just in time for Christmas.
Yes, just in time for Christmas. But if you do the numbers, you just see how competitive it is. You just have to be really picky and get the right fit, and the people who don't fit, you just have to be honest and say, this is not going to work. I wish you the best. I'm going to need somewhere else.
So now, what do you think about? There's a lot of talk lately about self-published books.
Right. I think that, I'm not a snob about that kind of thing, because it is very difficult. So why not publish your own book if other people don't? It would give you a huge education about the realities of the publishing world, which might help you for subsequent experiments in publication. I mean, I think a lot of people just have J.K. Rowling and Stephen King in mind when they think about the publishing world, and they all think that they're going to end up like that. And of course, the odds just aren't there.
I know.
And And yeah, so there's a kind of Pollyanna attitude, and let me tell you, self-publishing would definitely take that attitude away and introduce you to the nitty-gritty realities of what all that goes into publishing it and then distributing it and then much less making money and being a success with it. It's a very demanding business and has a few kind of quirky things unique to it that make it a difficult business to make money in compared to others. So, I think it's always better if you can get someone else interested enough in your book to publish it. I mean, I think it does look a little bit better. But that being said, if that opportunity is not available to you, especially if you're a first-time author, which is makes it doubly tough, and you have the resources to do it, why not check it out and learn from the school of hard knocks?
Yeah, no kidding.
You never know. You never know what's going to catch the imagination of the public and what is good and worthy of attention, but for some reason just falls dead. The rule of thumb is essentially you hope for 1 out of 10 will be a hit and essentially will subsidize the other 9, but you have no idea which one is the one.
so you've kind of
got to put out 10 and go from there.
Well, you know, Patricia Cornwell started, and then all of a sudden Kathy Rakes and this one and that one.
Yeah, that's super
awesome. Similar.
Yeah, that's right.
They're all very good.
Yes, absolutely. And in many cases, you're chasing the exact same readers. So it's just so difficult to predict. I mean, some genres get hot, right? Like so-called chick lit, right? Or children's literature right now.
You can get Oprah to read your book.
Oprah's Book Club or Heather Reisman's picks on Chapters.ca. That's obviously a huge coup. But in the end, you know, you just kind of have to publish good, entertaining stuff. That's your best shot.
Well, my take on the Oprah thing is her books, God bless her, she's doing a lot for literature.
Yes, yes.
But, geez, they leave me so darn depressed sometimes.
Yeah, she definitely goes for a certain literary quality that not everyone responds to all the time, right? Or even if you want to read a book like that once or twice a year, you know, you don't want to be reading this.
Not all the time.
All the time, right? So what does she think about a more entertaining book?
Well, Kelly Webb did her picks, too. And I think that your books might fall in a little more in love. Although she was really mainly only romance novels.
Right.
So, Nora Roberts got a lot.
Yeah, that's right. She gets a lot of play. Yeah, we're more Kelly Ripa. Kelly Ripa meets Dan Brown kind of crowd, I think.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, I can get into this. Definitely. So if someone is looking for a Lunar Balloon book, where would they find it?
You can go to chapters.ca, amazon.com. You can go to our website, lunarballoon.com. Our second book, The Berlin Dossier, is going to momentarily be on the shelves at Chapters. Very important to get into Chapters in Canada. It's responsible for a shocking percentage of book sales.
Yes.
And if you can't get in there, you know, good luck to you otherwise. So that has been one of the very interesting things about the book industry, is figuring out the distribution, right? Because in the end, the books have to be on the shelf to capture the attention of the public.
Yeah.
And that's a whole very interesting world unto itself. And that can't be ignored either, right? Like, just there's the quality of the product issue, but then there's actually how do people get to know about the product, even that it exists, much less that it has quality. And you have to get a good distribution relationship with someone who can actually sell books, and certainly Chapters can sell books.
That's right, they can sell books.
They take a cut, though, let me tell you.
Yes,
you better believe it. Yeah, no, it's always great. I mean, in the fall, we'll be doing readings with our Waterloo authors. And they've all been arranged with, like, Wordsworth Books and Chapters as well in Silver City. But for right now, our two authors are from Halifax and Montreal, so they're doing readings in their own areas, right? So it's really important when you sell a book to tie it into the author and to tie it into the local market of the author, because they have connections, friends.
Mm-hmm.
The press is more willing to cover local people, and so that's it has to kind of radiate out from there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Berlin Dossier, when does it hit Chapters? And
three weeks tops. You know, it's the summer. You know, you need some entertaining trash at the beach. Berlin Dossier by Leon Berger is it's a great book. It's about it's a cat and mouse book. It's about the Nazis fighting amongst themselves about who's going to be named Hitler's successor to the Reich, and it's kind of set 1938. It's the eve of the war. The main character is actually from Berlin, Ontario.
Oh, cool.
You know, back when Kitchener was Berlin, Ontario, and he goes to the big Berlin in the 30s, and he gets caught up in this Nazi intrigue, and the dossier contains explosive information about some of the Nazi officers who are trying to become Hitler's two. And so the chase is on about who gets the dossier and who gets named Hitler's number two.
Mm. Wow, that's great. And your first book, how did it do?
It was It's still selling right now, actually. It's called Murder at Muscle Cove. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yes, yeah. It's a dark murder mystery. It's not the kind of standard one. It has a darker edge to it, kind of a little bit more violence to it. But still, a very interesting murder mystery set on the East Coast by a Halifax author,
mm-hmm.
Hugh MacDonald, who is a children's poet. And we got, believe it or not, we got Alistair MacLeod to give us an endorsement quote on the front cover.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
They're friends, it turns out. So that was very useful, very helpful.
No doubt.
Absolutely. That helped open doors for us. The selling itself kind of goes in phases, and it's really kind of surprising. It was really a learning experience for us about kind of when to market and when the sales come up. And we're still actually, I mean, the book is selling better now than it did in November when it was first coming out. And in a way, it's because we've learned a lot more. I mean, books don't change, you know, they're produced, and there they are sitting on the shelves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can still sell a book years after it's actually published, right? And there isn't time-sensitive material in the content, so that helps too. So we're still very much selling that one. We actually just, he did a reading with Atlantic Superstores, and they sold 50 copies right on the spot just yesterday, actually.
Oh,
so
awesome.
Yeah, so you have to really stick with it. You can't kind of give up on the title. You have to keep plugging away at it, and you can get really surprised. A year later, you're suddenly selling all these copies. I mean, word of mouth takes a while to get around, and that's the ultimate endorsement with books,
yeah,
obviously.
Exactly.
Is that, you know, you've got to read this, or here, take my copy, and then they're motivated to buy it.
That's how a friend hooked me on all the Nora Roberts.
Really, eh? Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
It was the J.D. Robb when she was writing.
Oh, yes.
J.D. Robb.
Yes, right, right.
I like them too.
Yeah, okay, well, sure.
Darker,
yes, yes,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's good stuff.
Yeah,
it is,
yeah.
It's good stuff. Wow. That is so cool. So do you print your books here?
Our books get printed in Manitoba.
In Manitoba.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we shopped around locally,
mm-hmm.
But in the end, FreeSense is just so big,
yeah,
that although the local companies could do just as good quality, they couldn't quite be there on price. And
yeah,
you know,
and
we're a startup press, so, you know, we have to think about these things. We
yeah.
have to get the maximum bang for our buck. So that was a factor. And plus,
mm-hmm.
I know. So that made it very easy.
If you're friends.
Yeah.
That's, I used to be a buyer, and that's as legitimate a reason for.
Absolutely.
For
you know, if the deal is there, the fact that you're friends with someone is, you know, is just, you know, whipped cream on top,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
As long as you can maintain that relationship.
Yes, absolutely.
So, wow. So you get lots of books in, you get lots of manuscripts.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, actually.
Work.
Yeah, yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, yeah, going through it all. And I have a formula, you know, they have to send in a synopsis, and then essentially I read first three and last three chapters,
okay.
And if there's nothing there, then there's nothing there. So if there's something there, then I got to read the whole thing. And even then, you know, then I decide whether the whole thing sustains
well,
or not.
You know what, as this goes, from my point of view, as somebody who reads and reviews and
right,
then
right.
And gets on the air and goes, go out and get this book.
Yes,
I
right.
have to get this book.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah, so if with me, it has to catch me pretty
yeah.
much quickly.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm going, oh.
And I think that's the case for almost all readers nowadays, you know, like the overall market of readers is shrinking, and it tends to be a lot much more female, and you know, over 30, they don't have, you know, everyone's got limited time, and essentially I think you've got two chapters, then you get chucked across the room if you haven't gripped them by then.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you know, I come from a family of readers.
Okay.
We
yeah.
raised readers. My nephew has, when he was 7, he was reading J.K. Rowling's books.
Terrific.
On his own.
Terrific. Wow. Isn't that
yeah.
something? Yeah.
And he's since gone through everything, including the classics. He's read Moby Dick.
Okay.
The Count of Monte Cristo. You name it.
How old is he now?
Yeah. He's 13.
13.
Now.
Wow. Count of Monte Cristo. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Moby Dick, that's
yeah,
a hard one to get through.
Exactly.
No, that's not my cup of tea,
thanks.
But yeah.
Not mine either. He's like,
good for him. Yeah.
You know, he says, well, I think I should inform me. He thought he
I
should.
See, okay.
You know.
Interesting. Before he actually goes out and hunts whales, he
yeah,
should,
yes,
yeah, right.
He should know about whale hunting. But he's a very serious boy.
I see.
But,
yeah.
You know, and I have my brothers read, my sisters all read.
That's
so
terrific.
You know,
yeah.
we're in a reading family.
Great.
And our motto has always been, if a child comes to you with a book,
yeah.
stop what you're doing because the book is more important.
Excellent.
And we read to kids all the time.
Terrific.
That's kind
yeah.
of our motto. But I think that when you raise a reader,
yeah.
You don't.
Absolutely, you do. Yeah.
You know, you don't create a reader in school.
That's right.
You raise a reader. If you take your child and read to them daily
That's
from
right.
birth,
yeah, they get a sense that this is important. And also, I think that it becomes relaxing then. I think that's one of the great joys of reading is that it's so relaxing.
Oh, absolutely.
And you kind of learn that response. If you know, this has always kind of been what it has meant to you throughout your earliest days. You know that well. You're sitting next to your parent and they're reading to you and relaxing, having fun, pointing to the pictures. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember the first time I read The English Patient.
Ah, yeah.
And I heard that the movie was coming, and I thought, oh, okay, well, I should really read the book before, because sometimes then, you know, there's just this disconnect.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I read the book, and I thought, oh, wow, I bought it on Friday. I can remember.
Okay.
I bought it on Friday
uh-huh.
night at Kohl's.
Okay.
On my way home.
Yes.
I got home. I made a big cup of tea. I sat down, and I started reading. And then at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning, I closed the book and went, wow.
Get real.
Let me start again.
You are the real deal, Dorothea.
I'm a power reader.
I'll say, good for you. Yeah, it's a terrific book.
It's
and
even
a very good movie, I thought. Yeah.
Unfortunately, the movie took the heavy slant toward just, but you know, not unusual.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, seeking out the really coherent storyline is, you know, cinema kind of has to go that way. Yeah. And certainly, if you think of reading in terms of relaxation, right? There's nothing wrong with reading for entertainment's sake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I would love to know what are books 3 and 4 going to be called?
Book number 3, which is written, actually, get this, by an author who is blind. The whole book written by a blind author himself, Pat Dowsing. Local man, and it's called Falling from Grace in the Garden of England.
Wow.
And essentially, it's a sweeping soap opera kind of set in England from the 30s to the 60s, and it follows one family, the Cacketts, especially the female side of the family, across 3 generations. And it has a real kind of Gone with the Wind almost sense to it. I mean, different historical time, of course, but really good book. Really, really good book. Pat's a really gifted author. And essentially, as soon as I read the first 20 pages, I knew that this was going to be someone who gets a contract from us.
Oh, awesome.
And hilarious, his name is Pat, and all along I assumed it was a woman because the female characters were written so well, and usually men cannot write women characters plausibly at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just assumed this is a female author, and it just blew my mind when I actually met him.
Well, you know, yeah. The guy from Desperate Housewives.
That's true. That's true, but it's a rare thing. It is a rare
I have to admit.
Thing. Yeah. And book number 4 is a comedy, actually.
Okay.
But it's a book where I laughed out loud 8 or 9 times while I was reading. And I was like, how often does a book make you laugh out loud? So I knew.
Once in a while.
Absolutely, I had to sign this one. This is a local author named Sam Schechter.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually negotiating on the title. It will either be number 1 on planet Earth, or And Along Came Rudy.
Okay.
Yeah, and this book is about, it's set in the 70s in New York, in Brooklyn, a college graduate named Rudy,
mm-hmm.
who, for some reason, believes that he's going to be an instantaneous best-selling author.
Okay.
You know, a real ego case, hence number 1 on planet Earth.
Uh-huh.
And so it's this hilarious kind of coming-of-age story of discovering the real world and discovering that, you know, you're not going to write the number 1 novel in the New York Times best-selling list when you're just 21 and you're straight out of college. So just all of his foibles and his misadventures, there's some hilarious dating misadventures, and just his difficulties getting published and then wandering around Europe. Really funny stuff, especially the sexual humor. Truly hilarious. Essentially, the funniest parts are the excerpts from the main character Rudy's writing, and they're just so unintentionally funny. It's just so bad. Like, the writing is just so bad. It's just dripping with unintentional humor.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I can hardly wait.
Yeah, well,
I can hardly wait for that one.
Yes, well, I'm going to send you them all, Dorothea, and we'll see what you think of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hand it to me. I'll read. Well, boy, do I read.
Excellent.
Okay, so that's what's coming up for you?
Absolutely.
So we can look forward to seeing your writers, the local guys?
Yes, absolutely. Probably September, October.
Be sure that we get lots of information. Well,
absolutely.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Well, we'll do this again.
Terrific, Dorothea. Thank you so much for having me. It's very kind of you.
You know how to contact us now.
Absolutely.
And anytime you want to talk, you've got something in common.
Aren't you sweet? Thank you so much.
No problem. That's what I'm here for.